Welcome to the Daytime Confidential podcast, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. It's a top five episode, top five characters we hated but learned to love. Stay tuned. Joshua Baldwin, welcome.
Hello, hello, hello.
Carly Silver, welcome.
Hello.
We're counting down the top five characters we hated but learned to love. Now, this is a topic that sort of was inspired by Mike giving me a hard time on the podcast about Annie or about never, ever changing an opinion about a character.
And so you mean you do sometimes change opinions? I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Inconceivable.
I know.
I thought that this would be fun, and it is actually going to be the first in a trilogy of top fives, the other two to air sometime later in the summer or year, but it's going to be the first of three episodes that are going to be sort of related. So, top five characters we hated but learned to love. Josh.
My number five is from Another World, Everybody Drink. This character was only on for about a year and a half, but made a huge impact. It's Reginald Love from Another World. This character was only on screen for a year and a half, but for only being on screen for a year and a half, he made the most impact because we had heard the story of Reginald Love long before he came on screen. He was Donna's father, who separated Donna and Michael because he didn't want her messing around with the stable boy. Donna got pregnant with twins. She only thought she had one baby. He had shipped Vicky off to Lassiter, Pennsylvania, and they raised Marley as Donna's sister. We knew all of the horror show that was Reginald Love. Then they brought him on screen, and they brought him back with Marissa LaSalle, who was Mary McKinnon. And all of this horror show that this guy was, and I usually like villains, but the way that they talked him up was very one note. And when they brought him on screen, he was still a horror show. But then you had how he would melt in front of Mary. Now, there's a whole other story there because he had convinced her she was somebody else and he had taken her away 20 years ago and the McKinnons thought she was dead. It was that thing that you can do on a soap opera because you have so much time. Soaps have a lot of time on their hands to tell stories, and you can add a layer of subtle nuance of character development. And the way that they did that, this whole story was horrifying in all kinds of ways. But when Reginald and Mary were in a room together, you really felt that he had a heart, and that heart also extended to Vicky. He loved her. And when you added those layers onto this horror show of a character, I went from hating him to not loving him, but loving to hate him. And that was a better way to go for me.
I wish Mike wasn't having technical problems at the moment, because I don't know if he watched Another World back in the day. But I have a question for the Another World watchers that may be very controversial. Who is the real Vicky Marley?
You know, Josh? What? That's another top five, maybe.
Now, I don't know if that's a top five.
Marley. And there's Anne Heche's definitive. I know that Ellen Wheeler started it, and Ellen Wheeler was great, but when Anne Heche took over, it was just like, oh my gosh.
And how dare you not even mention Jensen Buchanan?
Well, and I like Jensen Buchanan, but Jensen Buchanan was a different Vicky. She was more of a heroine Vicky.
So for me, Jensen Buchanan was the only Vicky that I was familiar with. So when actress named Ellen Wheeler appeared as Marley, I was like, what is going on?
She has a bad habit of showing up at the end of things and really ruining them, doesn't she?
Well, but if I'm not mistaken, she's the originator of the role, wasn't she?
She is. But the way that they wrote that in is that Marley got burned in a fire. They did reconstructive surgery that made her taller.
Right.
It
right.
was bad.
Right. Well, that is like... Which soap was it where, it's Days of Our Lives Right Now, where suddenly short little Sarah is tall freaking Kristen.
Except that's math, it's not plastic surgery. There's got to be a difference somewhere.
Carly, who do you have at number five?
He came on to Days of Our Lives as a himbo with a hick dad. It's Ben Weston. I loved Robert Scott Wilson on the Prospect Park version of All My Children. Then that was unceremoniously canceled, and I thought, okay, well, he's going to go on and do whatever he's going to do. I'll never see him on another soap. Then he comes on as Abigail's love interest, and I've always had mixed feelings towards the various Abigails because she can be a little shrill at times.
She's not a great character.
You said it, not me. But I thought there was immediately something really interesting and dynamic. And when he ended up kidnapping her and the whole thing with the baby, I was like, okay, well, this was a good arc for what it was. And then he was written to have saved Sierra from that fire. And talk about giving a character that had, you know, maybe one or two notes, a whole new life. The Sin romance was something that, for me, I can't remember seeing a super couple or the modern day version of a super couple grow like that since maybe Hevan on The Young and the Restless with that type of fandom, and the actors had great chemistry. And, you know, I tried to explain to someone recently that he was a reformed serial killer, and they just giggled nonstop. And it, of course, it's completely ridiculous in the context of, you know, a love story. But within the world of soaps, this character was given a whole new life. And what I love is that he's not written like a saint now. So on screen at the moment, we see the fact that Sierra has amnesia and still thinks he's the necktie killer. And he may not have murderous tendencies anymore, but it's his past is still coming back to haunt him. And I love that he's more of like a brooding bad boy than a one note character, and with sort of the one note villain the way he seemed to be originally written. And I'm now he's a leading man, and I think that is that type of hunky brooding leading man is something that the show really needed, and he's a great addition to the now he's even got a Horton Christmas tree ornament.
Well, a longtime listener, Enrique on Twitter, Enrique VBJR, tweeted me, it's not a top five without ties and the inclusion of Rebecca Budig or any larger, longer than life female character of a certain age like Gloria or Helena. Well, I do have a tie. It's coming up at number five. I do not have Rebecca Budig, but the tie does include someone who is longer than life as a character.
Are they above 80?
I don't know if they're above 80, but I don't think that necessarily has to qualify.
Oh, okay.
There isn't a benchmark. That's just sort of more of a...
Age is nothing but a number, except when it comes to old broads.
Right. Coming in at number five is a tie, and I'm calling this my good girls, because one of them is Carrie on Days of Our Lives. Okay. I hated her back in the day. Because Sam, she always got in the way of my Sammy getting Austin, and so I hated
That's an
Carrie.
Interesting way to look at it.
I hated Carrie. She always got in the way of Sammy's schemes, but when she hauled off and slapped Sammy,
woo!
That was sort of a change. That was sort of a turning point for me with Carrie, because the good girl finally fought back. And ever since then, I've slowly learned to love her. She's not one of those characters that I like love. She'll never be on a top five characters I love list, but I have learned to love her over the years post the slap. Prior to the slap, hated her because she always got in the way in Sammy's way.
Did you like her in Rafe?
Carrie or Sammy?
I love
Carrie and Rafe when they had.
I'm not a big Rafe fan. I've never really liked any of his pairings other than when he was with Sammy briefly, but I didn't like both of his characters' pairings
with
Sammy.
Remember him and Kate? They were hot. Anyway.
I always liked EJ and Kate better than Rafe and Kate.
Ooh, EJ and Kate.
My tie, though, is someone who. And I'm going to have to preface this for this episode. What I realized in going back and compiling my list is there's a whole bunch of characters who I'd learned to love by time I started the podcast, but who I hated initially. And this is one of them. Vicky on One Life to Live. Because
she's an honorable mention on my list.
Because I loved Robin Strasser as Dorian. I love Dorian and Vicky the Good Girl. And see, that's the other thing. I'm never really a big fan of good girls on soaps, but Vicky the epitome of perfection, which is how I was first introduced to her. This was well before Ron took her back to her earlier roots of being crazy with Nikki. So like when I was first introduced to her, she was just basically this upstanding, do no evil woman in Landview. And Dorian, I love a manipulative old broad. And so I loved Dorian. And so I hated Vicky. But over the years and before the podcast even started, I had learned to love Vicky because I realized how much of the heart and soul of that show she was. But my first impression of Vicky and for the first couple years was I hated her because I started watching soaps other than Another World and Days of Our Lives around 1998, 99, 2000, depending on the soap. And so that's why that era, when I'm first introduced to things or first introduced to characters, is why I sometimes have differing opinions than people who watched in the 80s and the early 90s with other stuff that happened. So for me, Vicky and Carrie, my tie at number 5. Carly, who do you have at number 4?
Okay, so you're going to have to bear with me through this one because I'll explain why I hated her at first. So when everybody who's listened to me on the podcast over the last year or so knows that I love Maya Avant, and they did her wrong on The Bold and the Beautiful in terms of storyline. However, when she was brought on, she seemed to be only like a foil for Rick Forrester's like white savior guilt. And she was made this ex-con that didn't really have a significant personality of her own. She and Rick had this fairy tale romance they had great chemistry, but she wasn't written as a fully fledged character in her own right, it seemed. And, you know, the Forresters every so often would go help the homeless, and that's great, but there were never really any social issues addressed in.
You mean this is like the Bradys who go to Africa all the time?
Exactly. They think Africa's a country, it seems like. You know, like we do those great episodes with Stephanie on Skid Row, but then it's always, you know, poor people of color that are rescued by the Forresters and they're never seen again. So at first I was like, okay, why aren't they writing this character as a fully fledged black woman who's interested in Rick, which is entirely viable pairing. And then Maya's keen eyes observed Rick's wife, Caroline, and Ridge getting a little cozy. And everything changed for me when she busted up Caroline and Rick, because she staked her claim to the man that she left and said, you know what? Not only do I want the wealth, but I love the guy. So the wealth should come along with it. And then her sister came to town and Maya's whole journey to acceptance with her family as a trans woman and that beautiful wedding and the confrontation with Julius, it all came after we saw this character that seemed to be, you know, like a footnote in the Forrester story. And then we saw a beautifully drawn out character, a woman who wanted a family of her own and fought to get the man that she loved, and a heroine that I think I remember might have been Jamie or someone who dubbed her the Black Erica Kane. And she was a character and is a character for the ages, and unfortunately is no longer on our screens, even though Carla's going to be subbing in at YNR for a bit. I'm glad to see her back on my screen in any capacity. But I loved, once they started fleshing Maya out, I was such a fan. And Maya is still one of my favorite soap characters of all time.
Josh?
My number 4 is Wyatt Spencer from The Bold and the Beautiful.
Oh, that's a good one.
8 years ago, Hope stumbled upon a naked Wyatt rinsing off in the woods by the cabin, and nobody knew who he was. Hope just knew he was naked. And then we learned that he was Liam's long-lost brother, Bill's long-lost son, or not known of son. And for the next few years, we had to watch Wyatt sneak behind Liam and just call him Sloppy Seconds. Because every single person that Liam was involved with, Wyatt also married, had sex with, whatever. It was just gross. And then they paired him with Katie.
That is such a good pairing.
It was brilliant. It was such a turning point for that character. Katie and Wyatt, I still, in my little soap opera mind, grieve for that couple because they were brilliantly put together. And they were going up against Bill, and he brought a sense of peace to Katie, and she got challenged by him. And he adored her in a way
that Bill never did. She was always first with him.
He adored her. And yes, it was daddy's sloppies as well. And that's gross. But there was magic, chemistry, that moment on a soap that we long for where you're like, oh my gosh, look at that. They're brilliant. So that was the turning point for me with Wyatt Spencer. And I wish that they would go back to that.
You don't think he and Flo are one of the great couples of the ages?
Oh my God. Call the coupling with Sally as well. A good point for Wyatt. Flo can go on down the road.
She can flow. She keep on flowing.
She really can. She can float right on out.
Coming in at number five for me is Ashley, the semen stealing Abbott.
Not semen stealing.
Jamie's going to call you out on that one for not calling you for not calling her beauty.
my introduction on the young, like when you're a kid growing up, you see the Soap Opera Digest or the Soap Opera Weekly covers with Victor and Nikki and Ashley, right? So when you actually start watching the show for the first time and you fall in love with Nikki, and then at the same time, this woman is stealing the semen of Nikki's Victor. I hated Ashley.
I mean, because it was like Spunk on the Run. It was ridiculous.
Right. But it was one of those things where I've come to love Ashley over the years since then. But back in those early days when I was just starting The Young and the Restless, I was Team Nikki all the way. And even to an extent, I'm still Team Nikki, because when Ashley and Nikki have rare scenes together these days and they trade barbs, I'm always going for Nikki still. But at the same time, I've still learned to love Ashley. But back in the beginning, Ashley, the semen-stealing Abbott, hated her. Hated her, hated her, hated her. Josh, who do you have at number three?
It's a strange pick for number three, but it was probably of all of these the best example of how I could turn a corner with a character, even though I didn't really like all the other stuff around the character. It is Dylan McAvoy on Young and the Restless.
What?
Oh, how dare you?
I think
that we need to have there is no reason for a rock-petting idiot to be on a top five list about him improving.
There's a reason, because it's my opinion and it's valid because it's mine.
Okay.
Okay, so just bear with me. So the creation of Dylan McAvoy is ridiculous. I don't need Nikki and Paul to have a long-lost child. Didn't care about any of it. But when he was with Chelsea, and Chelsea was either pregnant with Connor, or she had, maybe had just had Connor. And Dylan thought Connor was his, and Chelsea was kind of stringing him along. And Chelsea then tells him that Connor isn't his, and they break up. What Steve Burton did in that story didn't make me fall head over heels in love with the character, but it made me notice the character. Because they gave him depth. Then they put him through the flashbacks from being in the military. And he dealt with that PTSD. And it gave the character a little depth. So by the time he left, I didn't really care one way or the other that he stuck around or not. But I didn't hate this waste of space. I thought, you know what? Nice to see Burton doing some good work here that's very different than what he's doing on General Hospital. Don't love the character of Dylan McAvoy, but I do love when somebody makes me take notice when I'm just convinced I don't care. And that storyline made me take notice.
Carly, number three.
So this is, it's not even a throwback so much as sort of a footnote character, but one that I still have the hots for till this day. Cutter Wentworth on One Life to Live. So he came on towards the very end of the One Life to Live run, and he was having lovers with Aubrey, who was trying to con Joey, and it was this sort of that classic trope. But Josh Kelly was so incredibly good looking that, you know, these two characters who seemingly came out of nowhere. I mean, yes, they were linked to the Buchanans, but we didn't know their background, and they weren't that, you know, they weren't rooted in history. So I didn't really have any reason beyond like, and Joey was sort of like meh at that point. So I didn't really have a reason to care except that this guy was really magnetic and he was scheming and he was really just sort of dashing and like a little bit of an old school soap punk. And then we went on to see him get really manipulative. Didn't he romance Dorian for a bit, I think? And then he married Jessica when she was Tess. And then he was just so bad. And then we find out that he was Alex Olenov's son. And just...
Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten about
that. I know, right? I was watching old clips the other day, and I was like, wow, I remember really enjoying the storyline. And he ended up being Kimberly Andrews's brother, and it was completely convoluted, but it worked for me anyway. And he was such a good bad boy that I never really hated him. It was more like apathy, like, oh, okay, another hunk, versus, oh, not only can this guy act, but this character is rooted in history. And I think had the show stayed on longer, he would have been a really interesting character to play out in more depth.
Meanwhile, I'd completely forgotten about the character. So until you mentioned the name Josh Kelly, I was like, who in the hell is she talking about? And then I was like, oh, Josh Kelly, he was a great actor, but I would have never remembered his name.
I am really good at digging up obscure things that nobody remembers and being like, hey, remember this? And they're like, no, because there's no reason they would. But I was just reminiscing on YouTube recently, and I was like, wow, I really remember enjoying this guy. This guy's performance and his looks.
Coming in at number three for me is a character who is one of the two characters who I probably had the biggest turnaround for. Nutmeg on As the World Turns. Once again, people who've listened to this podcast know I generally speaking do not like good girls from jump. There have been one or two very rare exceptions, but generally speaking, I do not like good girls. I find them boring. I find them as speed bumps in the plots for my more scheming characters. And I just am not a fan of like the classic good girl. Hated Meg on As the World Turns. Hated her. But they turned her insane, and she was wonderful and was one of the best things about that final era of As the World Turns. So coming in at number three for me is Nutmeg. Aww. Josh, who do you have at number two?
Oh, well, we're getting into that part of the list that's just going to thrill you. So number three was Dylan McAvoy, and I know that thrilled you. Number two is Lucas Robert Horton.
How dare you? How could you hate Lucas Roberts? Because even though he's a Horton, I do not abide by this Lucas Horton shit. He is Lucas Roberts.
except he's not.
Lucas Roberts or Lucas Horton... He represents a type of character that I struggle with on soap operas. The sort of, he's both a sad sack and defensive and just kind of a bitch ass bitch. And when they brought Lucas on, I just didn't like him. He just was always, maybe it was because he reminded me of those guys in high school that I hated. He were just walked around with all of the... They thought they had swagger. They thought they had confidence, but you knew if you blew on them the right way, that did not come out correctly. that's not what I meant at all. I meant that it was a very thin facade and you would find the insecurity below. Lucas has always been that character for me until they paired him with Adrian. I loved
Lucas. Really? It took that long?
Well, it did because I never liked him. But when they paired him with Adrian, it was a different pairing. I thought they brought out nice things in each other, and then they flipped Adrian and Bonnie. He had sex with Bonnie. He came up from underneath the covers and said, something's different down there, which I loved. And then Bonnie broke up with him. He thinks it's Adrian, and then he goes into the alcoholic spiral and starts to see Will. It added these layers. I know it's a theme for me, but it added these layers to Lucas that I had never seen before. And ever since the Adrian pairing and the fallout from the breakup and Will coming back from the dead, I have adored Lucas, and now he warms my heart.
Carly?
I could never forgive them for never updating his haircut after, like, 1995.
Oh, they gave true. Him,
and because he's such a good-looking guy. And I was like, why did they... He had this, like, I don't know. It was, like, always, like, folded right under his ears. And I'm like, do right by him, please. Okay, so this is another character that's a bit of a footnote. But this was the very... one of the beginning stages of my watching Y&R. And I loved him. Adrian Corbell on The Young and the Restless. Hear me out. Hear me out. The Reliquary storyline was complete.
Oh no!
Nonsense. Oh no, that storyline was terrible. But I loved JT and Colleen. That with Lindsay Fonseca in the role, and then later with Adrian Leone, and also Tam and Sursok. But JT and Colleen from like 04 to maybe 07, they made up, they broke up, they were sweet, they were angsty, they were just like, they were such a good young romance. And then Colleen decides to go to college. And she comes across this tall, or maybe short, I can't remember, you know, medium height, dark, handsome professor. And for me, their chemistry was just electric. And I was like, damn. I may have also been like at the age when I was just like, that about every good-looking guy that came across my screen. But for me, one of my favorite Y&R scenes that's not, like, doesn't feature a classic character is the time that they're snowed in together at the university, and they just went at it on Corbell's, like, office couch, and I was just fanning myself. And I know that they sort of later paired him with Amber, and that really was kind of strange, but I loved that triangle between that forbidden romance between Colleen and Adrian was hot. And I just have such fond memories. I didn't think that I would like somebody that came between this golden couple that I'd really come to adore, but they didn't do a lot of justice by the way they wrote him. He was a professor, but then he became like, was writing a story about Colleen, Brad's family running away from the Nazis. And I actually kind of enjoyed Brad being made to be the son, out to be George Kaplan, whoever he was, but I didn't like the Reliquary. But I loved that, I don't know, I liked him fighting for her against Brad, and I really liked the initial stages of their love affair, because they just had a lot of great chemistry.
Oh, back when JT was a viable character and not running around the city abusing people.
Or being buried in parks as a result of
where they still sit. Sorry.
And did we ever find that, how they got that mask made? Did they call over to Salem and say, hey, we need the Dr. Rolf discount?
The Dr. Rolf discount. That's awesome.
It's unbelievable that was the storyline, but there you go.
Coming in at number two for me is another character mentioned on the podcast, Annie from All My Children. There may have been a rant about that at some point back in the day. Melissa Claire Egan came on as Annie, and Annie was first introduced as a good girl, sort of, and she came across as a Greenlee bot. So I guess you are getting a Rebecca Budig mention, but Annie came across as a Greenlee bot, did not like her, and then they turned her insane. I mentioned this recently on a podcast. Melissa Claire Egan is one of the best actresses in her era who can portray insanity, which is why what has happened with her on The Young and the Restless, trying to gaslight people, has been so bad. You have this amazingly talented actress sitting there in a gaslight storyline being wasted when she was phenomenal as Annie on All My Children. And then after she had her mental break and improved a little in terms of like her mental state, she ended up with JR. And loved JR and Annie. They were so sexy together. They had so much chemistry. But Annie as a character had already changed for me to someone I loved when she went nuts. And so she is my number two pick.
You mean you didn't love her? JR and Marissa, the grand love story of the ages? How could you?
God. Oh, I miss All My Children.
The ghost of Babe.
There were so many wonderful characters on All My Children, and I miss them all. Also, Another World. Now, I don't miss Sunset Beach so much or Passions. I love some specific characters on Sunset Beach and Passions, but I don't miss those shows like I miss say, All I My miss Children in Another World.
I miss me some Carly Tenney.
Oh, yeah. As the World Turns is up there, too.
I would do just about... I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Maura West as Ava Jerome, but, I mean, just her with that compass is something that... being a bad girl with true, I feel that's something that soaps today have lost some of the nuance of, and I feel like Ava has regained it a little bit for, but like
soaps
where you could be
lost,
the ba-
soaps have lost
you can
the
be a
nuance
bad girl,
of,
but still, if not a heroine, then someone who's still deserving of a really good love story. I think they're doing that with Ava. I think they're doing that a little bit with Britt, although we don't know if she's getting a love story or she's just washing Jason's black T-shirts. But,
I actually feel that soaps in general have forgotten how to tell love stories.
I think that that's a good point. I think that, because, you know, love in the afternoon has turned into angst
plot point
in
the afternoon.
Mid-afternoon. Yeah.
Love in the afternoon has turned into plot point in the afternoon for 99.9% of the pairings. Nicholas and Ava is actually one of the few where their story, even though it has twists and turns, plot points, is actually being told in a classic love in the afternoon type story for them.
And it
works.
And also that a bad girl, even if she a bad girl doesn't have to fully reform to be worthy of love. Yes, Ava turned in Julian for what he did, but she's not milk toast. You know, she's not white bread. She still very much will, you know, shoot you in the forehead if you look twice at her the wrong way. But at the same time, Nicholas sees that. And he loves her for what she is. And I like, that reminds me of old school Carly, where Jack knew that she would scheme. And obviously he would call her out every time and moralize and yada, yada. But Carly could still be Carly and, you know, was still worthy of having everyone from Craig to even Holden, you know, worshiping at her feet, which I loved that pairing. I know other people did not, but I thought it was hot for what it was.
Well,
but
Craig
missed,
and Carly?
Holden
and Carly. I thought that
It was okay. It wasn't bad.
Carly, who do you have as number one?
Mutter. One Dr. Liesel Obrecht.
That's awesome. That's good.
Obrecht came on as sort of as part of this era that was zany and over the top and with these supervillains. And I enjoyed supervillains, but you know, there's only so many times you can get Faison killed off and bring him back, and it's like, okay. But then they introduced this German Hausfrau von Doktoren, that, not Hausfrau, because that's another, but this sort of like Bond villain parody with, you know, and she was a lot of fun as his counterpart and sort of lovelorn, you know, the woman that, up until we realized who Nathan was, had never given him the son that he longed for and was Britt's mom. And she was fun, but she was a bit of a one-note villain. And then Obrecht was given not even just a heart, but she was really shown to how much she loved Nathan and when he died, how she's wanted revenge on Peter. And now they seem to be pairing her up maybe with Scotty. And I love that. I like that she can still be, you know, a raging bitch at the hospital, but she can, you know, still fight for what's right. And she can still be manipulating the hell out of Dante while also, you know, plotting to take down evil Peter August. And that, you know, Kathleen Gotti does that accent so fun. She reminds me of like an evil Frau Farbissina in a wonderful way, or like a, from Austin Powers, like an evil one with a heart, but she's
Cloris
she's
Leachman
really,
from Young Frankenstein.
Yes. She's fun. And she's not one note anymore. She's a multidimensional character, and I love her.
Josh?
My number one concludes my triad of things Luke Kerr will hate. My number one is Franco Baldwin on General Hospital.
I was hoping someone was
going to
bring him
we
up.
We are going to have to revoke your top five credentials,
Josh. It's good to have disagreements.
It is.
So I loathed this character when James Franco came on and he wanted to use soaps as a little experimental theater thing. God. And he was running around killing folks. Although I will say the sex he had with Maxie, the sex Franco and Maxie had was really hot. Before
Maxie hasn't gotten over it since.
No, he really must have put it on her because he has not forgotten it. And But the whole story was all contrived. It was all ridiculous. Then Prospect Park happens. Todd Manning needs to go away, and they bring Roger Howarth back as Franco Baldwin. And the entire soap world collectively did a what the fuck. Why? Why is this a thing? But for the last 8 years, eight-ish years, the powers that be at General Hospital have done their best to redeem this character. And they slowly chipped away at it and began with the pairing with Carly. And when he duped Carly and sat there and ate air popcorn while watching her life explode on screen at that wedding.
I think we've all wanted to do that with the character of Carly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I, at that point, had turned a corner. And then they did the stuff that they do. Oh, it's a tumor, yada, yada, yada. I didn't really need that. I actually prefer things like Ben on Days of Our Lives when they just leave the crimes be. Then it's harder to work through, and I like that kind of difficult stuff. But they did the tumor stuff, but the brilliance was that Howarth worked so well with Maura West and the pairing with Ava and Franco as friends and exes, and he was so good with Franco was so good with Kiki, and then they put him with Lizzie Beth and
Roger,
a super couple. From my perspective, a super couple was born, and you had people in town still being very suspicious of Franco, as they should. And then you have the demonstration of how love changes things, and Elizabeth changed him. And then we had the brilliance of Franco and Cameron, which I just grieve for. I've never seen a show spend a decade trying to reform a character, successfully do it, and just kill him. I don't get that. But for me, he is the number one character that I used to hate and then loved.
I don't know that.
Can we just credit Becky's final scenes where she says, we have a lifetime together. And I also sort of came to love to hate Franco at the end. Was everyone else bawling at the end?
Nope. It was not a tear was shed.
Are you serious?
Not a tear.
Do you have a heart, Lucas Lorenzo Kerr?
They were a couple. To call them a super couple demeans the term
at
super couple.
Her on
no,
Twitter.
They were not. They did not go through enough to be warranted as a super couple.
Luke, he had tumors. He had tumors.
Everybody has tumors, and he had tumors before he met her.
But the way her love redeemed him, and that is a super, in terms of.
They did not go through enough to warrant super couple status. They were a couple, they were popular, but super couple in the pantheon of super couples, like the Minnie from Days or Luke and Laura? No.
No one's saying they're Luke
people
and Laura.
People use soap fans for the last decade have been so deprived of actual super couples that the meaning of super couple has been diluted. And Franco and Elizabeth are an example of that dilution, in my opinion.
In your opinion.
In my opinion.
Yes.
Coming in at number one for me.
I know people that are selling Franco and Liz merch. Honestly.
Coming in at number one for me is a character who I hated when she was first introduced, but this was so far before the podcast in terms of me talking about soaps with other people where I'm on the record. But I had learned to love her by the podcast, and that is Chloe Lane on Days of Our Lives.
Interesting.
I hated Chloe.
Wait,
I was not there.
Chloe?
I was not there for a ghoul girl.
Oh yeah, that was good.
And like, I was not there for it. I liked Nancy, and I liked her dad, but I was not there for Chloe when she first was introduced. I was not there for the like the goth thing, and
so you weren't there
like,
for the best part.
Well, for what many people are, but back then I was like, I was all about Mimi and Belle, Kristen Storms, Farrah Fath. I was all about those two characters. So I was like, why are we wasting all this time on Ghoul Girl? And so for me, that is the biggest transformation, because I have loved Nadia Bjorlin in that role for now decades. And But when it first started, when she was first introduced, I was like, why is she here and why is she taking up so much of my screen time? And so for me, that was number one. I did have some honorable mentions. Carl Hutchins from Another World.
Oh, yeah,
that's good. Did not like him, especially since he was messing with Rachel's children, Iris and Matt, all the time. Let's see here. Sally Spectra, the original on The Bold and the Beautiful. Yeah.
Why didn't you like Sally?
Because I didn't really like Sally Spectra.
Wait, you didn't
as a
love
character,
a ballsy old broad?
Well, but that's the thing. I didn't watch The Bold and the Beautiful enough. What I knew of Sally Spectra in the early days when I didn't like her was what I saw in the magazine covers. And then when I tuned in, she was always knocking off Stephanie and the Forrester designs. And so I was like, this woman is a cheat. This woman is a blah, blah, blah. And so I didn't like her because my only context for her at the beginning was she's just a knockoff artist. I wasn't watching regularly to understand how wonderful and amazing of a personality Sally Spectra was. But my first impressions were, I hate this character. Sam McCall. I don't love her. And I don't believe that she is I still don't accept that she's Alexis's daughter, but at the same time,
you're lucky Jillian's not here.
At the same time though, I can't deny the amazing chemistry that Sam has with Alexis and her sisters. So from that point, I accept her. I don't love her. But her being a Cassadine, Sam does not live up to the name Cassadine for me. Honorable mentions real quick, Carly.
I'm trying to think.
If you don't have any, that's totally okay.
Yeah, I don't think I have any.
Josh?
Honorable mentions. I had Vicky from One Life to Live as well. I had Lily from As the World Turns because I really like Noelle Beck's interpretation of that character. But that was more of an actor-based thing, but they did shift it. I have Greenlee Smythe on All My Children. I love Greenlee, but did not like her in the beginning because I was more a Kendall fan of the Kendall versus Greenlee. And I have Michael Baldwin because I didn't really know the history of the character. And when he came on, when I first started watching Young and the Restless, I just thought he was kind of a smarmy attorney. He was kind of a dick. And then I could have learned about the history of the character and grew to love him.
God bless YouTube.
On that Amen. Note, you can share your top five characters you hated but learned to love in the comments at Daytime Confidential. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DC Confidential. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/DC Confidential. I'm on Twitter at Luke_Kerr. Josh is at Dr. Joshua 9, and Carly is at Carly A. Silver. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Bye.
Bye.